Today on The Grave Talks, Haunted Wisconsin. Maybe it's just the circle of people I grew up around. Maybe it's just the physical location and everyone having common paranormal experiences. Whatever it is, talk of ghosts around the state of Wisconsin is a common thing. It's not as taboo a topic as it feels in other areas of the country. As a child, I'd regularly check out books from the local library about haunted Wisconsin, and I would ask teachers, friends, or really anyone who would listen about their ghostly experiences. On today's episode of The Grave Talks, we discuss several of Wisconsin's haunted locations, as well as a few others in surrounding states, with Craig Nearing of Fox Valley Ghost Hunters. We'll talk about the Farr Elementary School, just outside of Wisconsin in Iowa. It was shuttered in 2001. Many believe that the spirits of the children long gone still run the halls in fear of a principal once shrouded in dark allegations. We'll also discuss the Vasilla Axe Murder House, another nearby haunting. It's a home where children met their ultimate demise at the hands of a madman's axe many years ago. Why do their spirits still infest this property? Then join us for part two, a Gravekeeper exclusive, which you can listen to at patreon.com/thegravetalks. We will discuss demonic forces in a church. In Wisconsin sits a church called St. Joseph. It's no longer a functioning house of worship. In fact, it now holds relics of other people's things. Some believe it also holds the spirits of former parishioners, as well as a dark force that never walked this earth in human form and lurks in its dark corridors. Why would something so evil haunt a place once believed to be so holy? This is a place that I actually visited last year and had no idea of its haunted past. I took several pictures and walked the halls of this building, and it truly was a haunting experience. We'll discuss what I felt there, as well as truly horrific and dark stories surrounding this property. Also in part two, the Grand Opera House in downtown Oshkosh, Wisconsin, a theater that to this day holds up to its grand name. It also holds the spirits of those who once cared for it through its almost century of existence. And we'll also talk about a haunted winery in Algoma, Wisconsin, known as Von Steel. We'll discuss my personal experiences there with my family, unexplained activity that occurred while recording there one day. Also, who may be still part of the winemaking process from the other side. All that and more on today's episode of The Grave Talks. Craig, I first want to ask you, why is it, do you think, that Wisconsin is known for so many ghosts?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. When we wrote one of our books, Wisconsin's Most Haunted, Volume 2, my co-author, Enid Cleaves, she actually found a lot of information online stating that Wisconsin was indeed one of the most haunted states. I'm not certain if that's because of the massive American Indian burial grounds that are all over the state, or it seems like every city, or at least almost every city in Wisconsin, has some type of haunting or something going on.
Why do you think that is? Why is Wisconsin? I mean, it's not like it was, you know, one of the original 13 colonies, which that's what I would almost always assume, just because it's right there. It has a longer history in terms of, you know, colonization by you know, Europeans. But that's where my mind goes to. So why Wisconsin? Why would Wisconsin have such a history like that with hauntings?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I don't know. Maybe it's because all us folks over here eat so much cheese and we die so young, we all become ghosts. I don't know.
it's an interesting thing to think about. When we talk about hauntings, and quite often we end up talking about areas where there's high levels of activity, Native Americans are involved in that conversation, because there is a very high concentration of burial grounds all over the state. Would you say that maybe has something to do with it?
I would think so. I mean, just the property up at Summer Wind that we investigate throughout the years, we just recently found out that there might be burial grounds at the end of the, close to the end of the driveway. And there was an expert that went up there to try to distinguish that. and they believe they found the proof that it might be indeed true. So they seem to be popping up all over the place.
It almost leads one to think that almost all of the state is one giant burial ground when it comes down to it, just with the years and years of the Native American people living there and living their lives, generations, hundreds of years, thousands of years. And so that would lead one to almost, you know, go that way. I've heard very similar things about Mackinac Island as well, where you're more likely to hit a body when digging than not, depending on where you're trying to dig. That could almost be argued for the state of Wisconsin as well, I would think.
Oh yeah, definitely. Actually, two spots I've just been told about or not been known about for a while. We do a investigation in Wisconsin Rapids at a haunted school called First Ward, and they had a cemetery that was originally in the backyard that they had moved. The state moved it to the other side of town, but while they were putting in one of the streets, they came across some coffins while working on the street.
When that sort of thing happens, and they think they're moving it. Now, number one, that I think would be a good cause for disturbance in general. But number two, how often do things like that happen where they're going to do construction on something and they think they're getting it all, but records at a certain point are not so great? How often do we have neighborhoods in that state that are sitting there on either burial grounds or just cemeteries that are long forgotten?
Yeah, quite a bit, actually. There's so many, and then a lot of the graves don't even have stones or tombs marking them. I know there's a place up that was built. In Appleton, there's a semi-truck driving school that was built around an old cemetery. Now, if you walk out there, they have little signs saying, you know, the cemetery was here, but there are no gravestones. But everybody knows the bodies are still there. But, you know, who knows where they're exactly at? So I suppose when doing landscaping or building a house or building a road or through a part that might have been an old cemetery, if the gravestones were never really marked there, you're going to come up across something like that.
Especially if they were using things that weren't so permanent, like wood and such, to mark those graves.
Or nothing.
Or nothing at all, exactly. Yep. We just know that Uncle Joe is right over there, and then generations pass, and nobody knows who Uncle Joe ever was. Let's talk about, you have a new book coming out, I know, with some locations in that you're going to be focusing on, and there's many I want to talk about from some of your previous books. But give us a taste, give us your top, you know, three or four locations in the new book that really have stood out to you that you want to share some of the history of and what you found.
Sure. Well, the book is called Archives of a Ghost Hunter. It's actually in proofreading right now, so it's almost complete. So I would give it early part of September by the time it's out. Some of the best locations in there, one that we've gone to so many times, is Farrar, the haunted school over in Iowa, owned by Jim and Nancy Oliver. We've been there 14 times. We're going back. Actually, we're going back again the end of this month. We're doing a shoot with Gavin Kelly, who has Phantasmic Journey.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard of them.
Sure.
So we're going back there in August, or the end of August. Then we'll be back down there in November doing an event for guests to come down and investigate with us. But that by far has been our gemstone for hauntings, where you hear the pitter patter of little footsteps of the kids running across the gymnasium, EVPs from one of our investigators sneezing, and an EVP comes across saying "bless you." So just an amazing place with noises. We've never been disappointed at that place.
Tell me more about the school, about what was what's its history? How did it start? What do you know about its history when it was an operating school?
There's no really report of the death, but of course, again, there is a cemetery right across the street, and it seems like wherever there seems to be a cemetery, there's some type of activity close by. As far as the school goes, the only reports of anything out of the normal was that the principal, this is hearsay and rumors, but they were brought into us by former students, that the principal did some very not so nice stuff to his students, and supposedly might have taken advantage of one of the girls in the bathrooms, but that's just again, that's what you're saying.
Sure. How long ago was this place in operation?
It ended in 2001, as far as the school goes, as far as they closed the doors for good then.
Mm-hmm.
Just because everybody was kind of bound up in that same school, so they wanted to make a bigger school somewhere else.
When there's the stories of these allegations and stuff, how far does that go back? I'm assuming quite a ways?
Quite a ways, yeah.
Okay.
When we used to, we don't like to provoke spirits. We never have. We want to treat them, you know, nice. That way you hope to get nice responses back rather than pissing the ghosts off like you see in a lot of the TV shows. But we'll sometimes say, you know, I think the principal's coming. Can you hide or something? You better hide in a locker. Well, one night we were talking about the principal and I fell asleep because I had a long day, but we had two of my investigators. They've been on the team quite a while. And that night, the lockers were slamming back and forth for about 15 minutes. They were so scared they didn't even want to leave the room.
It's very bizarre. When you have something like that where it's not a murder, not, you know, not a suicide, not anything like that, but trauma that is allegedly to have occurred at some point in the many, many years of that school's existence. And that seems to be a trigger point, the topic of that trauma. Why do you think that is? I mean, if it's not someone that was murdered or died there, if it is someone who had simply passed on in their life due to whatever, you know, life circumstances would be, do you think they went back to that school? Why would a spirit go back to a school where trauma occurred? Or is it more of an energy type thing? This is just an opinion question.
Sure. I've been asked that a lot, actually, of, you know, why, if there's no trauma, if there's even no trauma and there's nothing that, you know, can pertain to anybody passing away in the place that we investigate, why would they be there? I think that was maybe possibly where they were the most happiest. They were around their friends, you know, around, maybe they just enjoyed going to that school, you know, so they want to hang out with, maybe their friends are all there. Maybe for them, that was their meeting place.
And that would be a good answer almost for any school, because that was my other question, is just schools in general. They seem to be a fairly haunted location when they're shut down and their time has come. It's an interesting question to ask as to why schools. I think everyone has different outlooks. Some people, that would be the last place they'd want to ever go back to. But for others, that was their happiest time.
Yeah, well, we've not even encountered just schools. It seems to be schools, churches, you know, sometimes the closed hospitals. I don't know why you'd want to go back to a hospital, because I hate going to them now.
Sure. Any other activity in that school beyond the lockers and the fear of the principal?
Oh, yeah. Disembodied voices. I have a tendency to yell out Marco sometimes, and once in a while something will yell back Polo. And they did that a couple times for us there. A lot of REM pod action. We'll leave the REM pods up on the stage while we sleep, and they'll be going off most of the night. Footsteps in the hallways, down in the gymnasium. The very first time that we went there, we normally would sleep down in this little break room with a microwave and some couches and chairs. But now we've been sleeping up in the auditorium because we want to hear the footsteps of the kids run in and out. But the first time we were there, we were down in the break room. We were sleeping, and I heard a basketball game going on downstairs. I woke my investigator up and says, someone's playing basketball in the gym. Let's go check it out. So we head down to the gym, get down there. There's nobody there. Nothing. But we clearly heard a basketball game going on down there. And we're not the only team to report it. There were other teams that reported it as well. And that night, some of our investigators that were sleeping on air mattresses had their covers pulled off of them while they were sleeping.
When you got to the gym, I'm assuming, did the sounds cease?
We heard it all the way down till we got to, there's a staircase that's opposite the gym, so you can't see the gym when you go down the staircase. When we got down to the bottom of the staircase, it stopped.
With a school like this that had ended its regular scheduled workday in 2001. There's obviously plenty of folks who would have attended school there. Heck, I would have attended school there had I lived there. That would have been a school that I would have gone to. With that being said, have you been able to speak with anyone who attended the school while it was in operation and have heard any stories of any odd occurrences or paranormal encounters as staff or students there?
I know some of the owners have talked to people that have gone to school there because they drive up and say, "Hey, we used to go to school there." Now, from what I heard is a lot of people say they haven't heard any reports that it was haunted when they were there. And one girl in particular sent me a message online when we posted an event about the school. She said she used to be a cheerleader there, and she was there cheerleading after hours, quite a few nights, and she says it's not haunted. But I have to ask her and say, well, were you sitting there, in quiet? Are you listening for the spirits? Are you trying to communicate with them? No, we're just cheerleading. Well, I'm not sure. I know cheerleaders, and you can't hear much over cheerleaders.
You would have to think probably one of the most difficult places to investigate while it's active with the living would be a school, because of the sheer amount of noise and the things that children get into and the odd things that they do and get into that could easily be misinterpreted as paranormal.
Definitely.
What are some of the other locations that are in the new book that stand out to you?
Beliska Axe Murder House, also down in Iowa. Okay. We've been there twice. I like that place. It's creepy. We were, the very first time we were there, they talk about how the little boy opens the closet door, or one of the children opens up the closet door in the upstairs bedroom, and it will open by itself and it will close by itself. Now I know that we went up there, we tested the theory to see if any, before we even started, to see if any drafts were up there that would open it or dislodge it and close it again by opening up the bottom, the downstairs door, and then, closing it tight and shutting it a little faster to see if any air movement would do that. And of course it didn't. It was very, very dry up there, very still, almost like dead calm. There's no winds, no breezes, nothing up there. And we were setting up the cameras. Unfortunately, it seems to be all the times that we're setting up the cameras that something happens, and we didn't have it recording yet, but we're sitting there in that room putting one of the cameras in the corner and shoot down the hall, and the door on the closet squeaks open, opens up about halfway, stays like that for a few minutes, and then closes and shuts. And we're like, oh my God, it really happened. And I'm like, darn, we didn't have it recording.
What is the history of this Axe Murderer House? What's the story behind it?
The Axe Murderer House dates back to the 1900s, 1912 to be exact, was when the occurrence occurred, that the tragedy. There were six kids there. There was four kids of the parents and two of their friends there. And supposedly they went to church, they came home, went to bed that night, and that supposedly someone was either hiding in the attic or the pantry, and they had come down and basically took an axe, murdered everybody while they were in their sleep. I believe there was only one of the girls, one of the younger daughters, or one of their friends, that had axe marks, defensive axe wounds, that she was blocking the axe from hitting her. That was the only one that was murdered there that, otherwise, other than that, everybody there was just, like I say, axed to death in the middle of the night. But the only person that woke up was one kid, which is kind of amazing that nobody else heard this, the swinging of the axe and all that stuff. But the killer had put, after he had left, when they came and they found everybody, they found that all the mirrors in the house were covered with sheets. To me, that makes me think that the killer didn't want to see his own face. And then they also found slabs of bacon on the floor near some of the killings, and also there was breakfast, like the killer decided, hey, I'm gonna have some breakfast before I leave. And so the slabs of bacon, I don't know if that represents a massacre or some type of something to that that, you know, what they did. So
what was the motive? Did they catch the man? What was the story there?
No, they never caught the person to this day. Of course, back then, the forensics, like they are today, nothing in comparison. You know, they had to go all by witnesses, and they thought it could have been a local passerby, or they even thought it could have been someone local to the area, but they really didn't have a clue who actually did it. The story was so popular back in 1922 that... Or 1912, that it replaced the Titanic sinking on the front page of the paper.
And that took a lot to replace that, because that was on the front page of papers far beyond just where it had happened for almost a year. I remember, if I had known about this story, I would be looking out for it. But years ago, I was very fascinated with Titanic as a child, and I remember going into the library looking at the microfilms. Literally for all of 1912, and it was on the front page story every single day in my hometown of Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, of the newspaper all the time. So to have something break that, it would have to be quite a story. And this certainly sounds like it, especially something not too far out of the bounds of Wisconsin. After the murders took place, and then this house, you know, was still there. Obviously, it's still there to this day. How far into the future did it take for things to start being reported of a paranormal nature? Do you know?
That I don't know. I know it's a very popular paranormal investigation for teams. It's booked up almost every night for a year. If we schedule a team trip there, we almost have to book a year in advance. But it's a neat place. Like it's so rustic on the inside now. I don't know if much of it is original or anything in there, but the house, of course, being that it's, you know, still the same house, but it's got this old-fashioned stove in the living room. The basement is all dirt and stuff. They thought that he possibly could have hid in the basement too and came back out, but there's only one way to get out of the basement, and that seems to be through the doors in the front of the house, like the doors that from the outside.
When that property became a, you know, essentially a spot for paranormal investigators to go in and rent out and do their investigations in, prior to that, was someone still living in it for all those years? Was it sitting abandoned? What was its story?
I think it was abandoned for quite a while. I don't know if I could even live there.
Yeah.
With all those murders. It'd be like Amityville Horror.
Yeah, and I would just think the lore around town of there's that house, you know, it's still there. It's amazing that it's still there, considering how long ago this occurred, that it's still even standing. When you go into a place like that, what are you feeling? I mean, I don't know how sensitive you are to things. I mean, I always kind of put people on a scale of almost 1 to 10 in terms of sensitivity. 1 being like, something feels a little off. I don't know what. I can't tell you. I'm not hearing voices. I'm not seeing anything. But it's just kind of oddly uncomfortable. You know, all the way to 10, where somebody is literally able to almost hear or see things that others are not. You know, same way I would say with sight. You know, number, you know, 1, can you see the small letter at the end of the room on that sign? And no, I can't. And 10, yes, I can read everything in micro print over there. I just view it as like a sense. Let me ask this. Where do you put yourself on that scale in terms of sensitivity?
I can sense things probably 50% of the time. I can almost feel like I can almost tell people, hey, I think there's something in the room with us right now.
Okay.
I have that sensibility that, you know, that I believe there's something there, and there's other times where I just don't feel anything, and maybe it's because it's not there. But well, going into the Villisca axe murder house, and I'm not one of these persons that get scared too easily now. I've been doing this for a while. But when I went in by myself the very first time to the axe murder house, walked in the door. I wanted to set up some equipment before everybody else did. And I just had the sense that there was something not right about the house. Something was there watching me and it wasn't even dark yet, but, you know, it was dark enough in the house that it gave me the creeps. And it's like, okay, I said, I'm not going to set up the equipment. I'm going to have someone come in there with me and set up the equipment. And usually I'm not like that. Usually I can walk around the building and like over at Farrar, all the ghosts there, the children, they've talked to me. I know most of them by name. It's easy for me to walk around that school and set up the equipment on my own and not have anything to worry about. But I just got this awful feeling of dread walking into the Velisca X murder house that I needed someone with me there just to feel safe.
Had you not had someone there, is there ever locations that you go into where you just, you feel, I don't want to investigate this after all?
I haven't yet, but I'm still hoping for that. We always look for something new to do each year, a team trip, like we just got back from St. Albans Sanatorium over in Radford, Virginia. So that place, even to me, wasn't that scary for me. I don't know. Some places in there, I mean, I didn't walk around by myself either. We had a big team, so... But usually my hair would stand up on its end if I felt like there's something close to me. I didn't feel that way there.
Let's talk more about some of the activity that occurred there at the Axe Murderer House. I know you talked about those doors opening. Something like that where it's investigated so heavily. What's your take on this, on that house itself? Is it still the children? Are they conscious? Are they there? Or is this a reoccurring energy that's being, you know, almost conjured up because of the constant, you know, energy of the paranormal investigators being in there, wanting something, you know, just that energy in itself, I think, can sometimes trigger something if there is a battery essentially to play with.
Yeah, I think it's both, actually. I mean, with all the different teams in there, night after night after night, you would eventually think that a lot of it would go away. But when we were there twice. The second time, not so much. But the first time, I captured a lot of audio from the children that were there. Now, when we went the first time, it was probably around 2011. And I had left the voice recorder in the basement while we were outside resting, relaxing before we were leaving. And I captured something walking down the stairs. You could hear the creaking of the boards going into the basement. Then you heard a little boy's voice say, said Ina. And Ina was one of the little girls that was murdered there, one of the daughters. And so I captured that on audio, and that was really cool. And one of the other, we were doing a ghost box session there, and something I really don't understand, and I have the audio, maybe I can show it to you sometime, but the audio that I don't understand that came through was the voice on the audio said legion, meaning many, demonic in a sense. I don't know if that's what they meant by that, but the voice that came through said legion, and then it paused, and then it said Lena, which is one of the daughters that was murdered there as well. It goes, Lena, I didn't do it. What was that all about? Legion, pause, Lena, I didn't do it. I have no clue what that meant.
Yeah, there's so many ways.
Murder him or what?
So many ways to interpret it. And I think sometimes when we get those messages, it can be, for lack of a better term, I think almost overblown an assumption in what it may mean. Just with what we're experiencing now, what I mean, I've heard from so many investigators and investigations all over the country with ghost boxes and things of that nature, where we're almost picking up conversations amongst themselves.
Yeah.
On the other side. And oftentimes those conversations have nothing to do, it seems, with the event that brings the investigators there. It's almost, you know, something that, yes, it happened, but they're on their day-to-day lives. And this was a long time ago, just as it was for us. It still was a long time ago for them. And it seems oftentimes they're almost going about their day going, who are these people here now or whatnot? I've heard that so often where they're commenting on, oh, who do we got here looking for us now or things of that nature. And I think sometimes just phrases and sentences can very easily be interpreted because we want them to be pertaining to what the event is that we're so focused on. And I think sometimes they may just be talking amongst themselves of, I didn't do it. It may be, I didn't walk behind you over here.
Yeah,
just
like that, yeah.
just like normal everyday stuff where you know, because it is so ghostly, we put those assumptions there. I don't know. That's just kind of my thought on it. It's a thought I wouldn't have had a couple years ago, before this technology existed, where people are picking up those very conscious back and forth conversations having nothing to do with the living, but yeah, seemingly completely amongst themselves.
Yeah, definitely. It even happened at Farrar too. And I pick up on that too, because some of the EVPs, one of the EVPs that came from Farrar said, "Lucas can't see me." So it's like somebody was hiding from one of the boys in the classroom or something. Mm-hmm. And then, on audio, we left an audio recorder in one of the classrooms overnight while we were sleeping. And on that audio, I got a girl singing, "He loves me, he loves me not." And she said it about 3 or 4 times, and she was singing it. It was kind of cool.
What are some of the other areas in this new book? Give us one or two more that you want to talk about that will be covered.
Well, like St. Albans Sanatorium down in Virginia, that was our last investigation. It's an amazing place. It's huge. We spent 2 nights there, and it's kind of hard to explain all the different rooms in this place, but that's where basically the people were locked into their rooms in that place, so they couldn't get out unless they, you know, were let out. And we had quite a bit of activity there. In fact, actually, I would say there's more activity at our cabin, and I talked about that in my book too. At our cabin we were staying at, reports at our cabin where there are Civil War soldiers in the area. We've stayed at these Walker Creek cabins about 35 minutes from the sanatorium, and we woke up one night and there was a loud shuffling of feet on the front porch of our cabin where we were staying. And one of our friends looks outside and here there's a swing swinging back and forth, but yet nobody's in it and there's no wind. So I looked out the window and the swing just suddenly stopped, like something grabbed it. So that was really neat.
And that's one of those things where once you've done this for a while, the reaction is, that's really neat.
Yeah.
To others, I think that would be rather disturbing because it goes against the laws of physics of how did this suddenly occur? You know, not only with its swinging, but I think almost even more startling, its sudden halt. When things like that occur, are you ever... have you ever had an incident, and I'll kind of just open this up a little bit more, where you were at a place of where you were going to be lodging for the night or staying over at, whether it be an investigation or just the place you were lodging, where you said, okay, I think I'm going to go down to the Super 8 instead, because this is just a little bit too much for me?
Yeah, I never actually had a problem staying anywhere other than this place. This was the only one that I actually encountered that was just kind of insane, just with the footsteps. And then I went into the room that night and looked out the window, and my window looks out onto the porch, and I saw what looked like there was a guy in some type of uniform, which might make sense to the Civil War soldier that someone else had reported coming up the driveway when they were on one of their when they were staying there as a guest.
Sure. Well, that makes sense for the settings and what was going on. Tell me about the sanatorium a bit. I mean, it sounds like there was something very horrible there where they were locking the people into the rooms, not letting them out. What is the history there, first of all?
People that stayed there, the ones that were not staying there by choice, but the ones that were there, committed suicide. I think it's known for about 4 or 5 suicides. There's a bathroom known to have at least two suicides in it.
Okay.
And we actually investigated that bathroom. We had it was kind of funny. I don't know if whatever was there didn't like me, but we had a REM pod that was, and you know, a lot of times you got to wonder if those REM pods are 100% legit or not. But we had a REM pod in there and it started going off to questions like immediately. It wasn't going off like a couple seconds after you asked the questions. I mean, it wasn't going off like a couple minutes after you asked the question. It was going off immediately. And I was up there and They said, do you like Craig? And, well, the REM pod didn't go off. And then it says, do you not like Craig? And it went off immediately. And then it said, do you want Craig to leave? And it went off immediately. So I'm like, okay, this is BS. You know, I think this is just, you know, coincidence. So I said, do you like me? Nothing. It didn't go off at all. And the minute I said, do you not like me? Went lit up like crazy. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's something that was there that didn't want to be disturbed.
Yeah.
And it obviously was letting itself be known. What are some of the other things that occurred in the sanatorium? Was there any other hot spot areas that really were uncomfortable? Because oftentimes I hear of those locations being some of the more uncomfortable to be investigating.
Yeah, the waiting room to the electroshock therapy, the waiting room that they had there, we had activity, quite a bit of activity out there. We had disembodied voices, whispers. We didn't hear what they said. And some of our investigators were actually touched in there by something, and I felt something pull my shirt down in that area. Weird, odd, anomaly-like lights, but not like an orb or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just like weird lights that would shoot past you. Stuff like that in that area. Unfortunately, I was kind of under the weather when I went down there. I had a really bad sinus infection, so, and a really high temperature. So investigating there wasn't the greatest for me, but it was a really unique place to visit.
Let me ask you that, because that's an interesting thought or an interesting topic to bring up when we're talking about ghost hunting. And mainly because we hear so many stories on our other show, Real Ghost Stories Online, about people having paranormal encounters when they're not in the best states. Oftentimes it's mental health, but sometimes it can be physical health as well. Is there an idyllic state to be ghost hunting? And not just for how you're feeling, like I'm feeling good and I'm not going to be sneezing here all day. But do you find anything where things seem to be more attracted to messing with you when you're not in the best of health or mental states or health states or vice versa?
They say that, or at least from what my friends say, that, you know, when you're under the weather, you might sense more than what's really there. Or if you're, I tell people, like, if you're pregnant, don't go and investigate in a haunted place. And I'm not sure if there's anything to that. I don't know of any pregnant women that have ever been, you know, messed with in any certain manner.
Sure.
But maybe they don't want to, you know, put their baby in harm's way, which would be my guess.
Sure.
I know that, and I don't do this. I never have, because I drive semi and I don't do drugs. I don't drink a whole lot. But I know people that are, you know, supposed to be smoke weed, you see stuff that's not there, which is probably something you see that's not there anyways. But
mm-hmm.
Supposedly the spirits don't like that, or they're just, I don't know. They want to mess with you more if you do that. So
that wraps up the first part of our conversation. Part two for you tomorrow, right here on the feed. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss that. If you want ad-free access to all of our episodes, simply sign up through Apple Podcasts. Even try it for 3 days free and binge away with no commercials. You'll also get advanced access to all of our episodes well before they're released to the public, all commercial free. Apple Podcasts, check it out. Or patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to The Grave Talks.